Welcome back from the break, you guys. So there we were out here, 5 miles out in the middle of nowhere. And we'd just taken stock of what went on. Started pulling my clothes off, pulling the layers off, kind of letting the wind. It was a little bit windy that day, so we're kind of letting the wind dry things out. And it's kind of funny when you step back and you're forced into things. You're going to start looking at things differently. And if you can grab a hold of your emotion and just start thinking objectively, things will come to you. And we, you know, I experienced a lot of this in the Coast Guard. We had to think objectively through chaos, and Tucker thought, you know, through, chaos of war, having to think objectively through these things. And so at this moment, we're sitting there thinking, man, what are we going to do? And then it dawned on us, well, you know, if that fuel tank's floating, that motor is still there. And so I stripped down to nothing, absolutely nothing, because I wanted to keep everything as dry as I could. You know, all my underclothes were still dry, except for at the arms and around the neck. And I wanted to keep everything as dry as I could. So as we were talking about this, I stripped down to everything. I walk out as far as I could and grabbed a goose decoy underneath both arms. So I had two goose decoys as naked as I was the day I was born. And I'm paddling out there and I grab a hold of the fuel tank and I start pulling it back. I let go of one of the goose decoys, put the fuel tank under my other arm and hold on to the other goose decoy. And I'm paddling back. And as I'm paddling back, I could feel just a little resistance, but I knew that the motor wasn't completely dragging on the bottom. So we're paddling back and we could grab the fuel line and we're pulling ever so slowly. And all of a sudden we can start seeing the top of the handle. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those mud motors, but the one that we have, the handle is probably 3 foot long, and then behind it's another 6 or 7 foot long, and then the motor sits in the middle. And we can start seeing the handle, and I lunge out there, grab the handle. About that same time, the fuel line popped off of, you know, because you can only pull on those things so much. They're just a little metal tab. And it popped off, and we pulled the engine in. Yeah, it was a little bit nutty. And before we even started it, I had those multi-tool in my coat. So I got the multi-tool out and we pulled the spark plug off. We were able to twist it out with the multi-tool and we turned the engine over and got all the water out of it. Checked the oil. Of course it was way over full and looked like, you know, coffee because the oil emulsified with water. So we drained it down to just a little bit over full because we wanted to keep all that lubrication properties as much as we could, right? But if you have too much oil in there, then it'll beat it and it'll put air in it and then you lose some of the lubrication then too. So we knew that. So we drained all the oil out, or not all of it, just enough to, and then put the spark plug back in, hooked the fuel line back to it, looked down in the fuel tank and there was no water in the fuel tank. And started the engine and it started up. And we're like, oh, we're in business. We're going to make it through this. And then I swam out again, just as naked as the day I was born, swam out again, grabbed the boat and we hauled it back in and then got it close enough and we could flip it over. And we flipped it over and it still had a little bit of water in it, but we pulled it. We were able to pull it up on the bank and then flip it again. And so we started thinking, we got all of the decoys back. We got the motor back. Of course, it was a little bit sketchy. And we have the gas tank back. And we have our shotguns. And we still had some shells. And even had my thermos full of coffee because it was floating as well. So we got it too. So we put it all back together, put our clothes back on, and we're semi-dry. I mean, we were pretty stinking dry. We probably get that wet when we're hunting, you know, just by putting decoys in the water and pulling them out and dropping stuff in the water and reaching down and grabbing it. So we're pretty used to how wet we were. So we decided, well, you know, let's make our way back to the boat ramp. Now, imagine this, you guys. Imagine this. I don't know if you guys spend much time out in the marsh, but could you imagine what it would be like to be stuck 5 miles out in the middle of a marsh somewhere? We didn't even, back in those days, all I had was a blueberry phone. It wasn't even, you know, remember those old blueberries? And so thank goodness, because if I had a phone now, we probably would have had naked pictures of me on Instagram by now, but which would have been horrible, right? Thank goodness some of the cell phone stuff wasn't around when I was younger, because some of the stuff that we had to pull is stuff that you probably don't want running around the internet. But anyhow, we didn't even have the number to the sheriff. Like nowadays, I have the number to the sheriff in my boat and in my phone. And if something happened, say just, you know, my battery died or something like that, I could call up and he'd be out there in no time. I'd have a GPS. I could send him a pin, but that's not how it was back then. That's not how any of that was. You were pretty much on your own. And just think about that. Here we are out in the middle of this barren marsh that we would have to figure out a way to walk out of. And it would have taken us all day to get out of there. And then we would have lost almost everything that we had. I mean, we would have had to get back out there somehow to go get the boat and the motor and stuff. But, divine intervention, I believe, for that motor to be able to, where we could get it in and the hose didn't pop off until we got it to the bank. If that hose popped off and we weren't able to get that thing any closer, it would have just sunk down the bottom. There's no way I could have dove down and got it. For one, I wouldn't have been able to see it. I would have had to dive down and feel for it. But it all worked out. And I took it for granted back then. That could have been nasty. That could have turned into something that was completely horrible. But this is the mindset that we had. And we didn't even go all the way back to the dock. We found a place that the geese were using. So we stopped there and hunted for the rest of the day until we got to the dock. Of course, we were being a lot more careful. But at the same time, we were like, well, we're already out here. We got a thermos full of hot coffee to keep us warm. We might as well hunt. And we ended up shooting geese that day. That is, when I look back on it and I look through time and I start looking at some of the things that have changed within the way that and this is a story about guys that had a lot of technology and a lot of stuff. Compare that to like 100 years before and some of the stories that, say, my grandfather came through. The reason I bring this up and the reason I talk about it is because I think there's a certain thing that we lose in this world. I think there's some things that we lose through making things easier for us. And now, don't get me wrong, technology and the advancement of medicine and a lot of these things, a lot of people wouldn't be alive now if it wasn't for that. But understand too that it was this adventurous spirit that led to those technological advances. I mean, for people to get into a spaceship and get blown into the atmosphere, past the atmosphere, that took an amazing amount I don't know what you would call it, kahungas, testosterone. Because there's, you know, women that have done amazing things too. And I don't want to just leave it at testosterone, but this spirit of a little bit of wildness, right? But I think we, as a society, have lost that. I look at some of these old commercials, and I see guys on their big wheels, and they showed, like in the 70s, where they had this big wheel where you could pull a brake on it, and it would make you do circles, and all these kids were riding down through there, and none of them had any helmets on. And I realize more kids died probably from head injuries back in those days than they do now. But there's certain towns like here in Southern Oregon that you can't. I remember we helped with Youth for Christ and we had a skate park in, and kids would show up without helmets and the cops would come by and tell them that they could write them a ticket for not having a helmet on. That's absolutely ludicrous to me. That now we've gone from pressing ourselves into this stuff and now we're trying to protect so much that we have learned how to be apathetic. And our, I think our young men and our young women are growing up in an apathetic world where they don't believe that they could do a lot of the things. Another thing too is, you know, there's a thing called dopamine that we're given, that when we accomplish hard things, when stuff happens and we get through it, and you get a shot of dopamine, and that makes you do harder things. That makes you continue to do these hard things. But I think we artificially get those shots too through the things that we do. Nowadays, you know, technology puts us in the seat where we can actually get shots of dopamine from something that is not real anymore. And if you look at like the metaverse and everything, where everything's moving towards that end, now you're getting shots of dopamine for doing nothing. But in your brain, you did a ton of things. You know, I'm not down on video games by any means, but if you look at how worlds were built, say in Minecraft, people, young men, a lot of times, it was mostly young men, would get this shot of dopamine from the universe that they built within a computer that really doesn't exist in reality. And that's why we've created the Life Outdoors, is we want to bring people back to the reality of having to deal with cold, having to deal with a boat that you flip over. We, of course, we don't want anybody to be in those circumstances, and we're never going to put people in those circumstances. But at the same time, just living in the woods for a week elk hunting puts people in circumstances that they've never been in before. When we did the Crucible Project, we had people that were there that were setting up their tents, and they were asking me, and these, mind you, these guys never, you know, spent the night in a wilderness area like that. But they were asking me, should they put their tent next to the trees because the bears could come in there? And I was thinking to myself, man, you know, I never even think about that kind of stuff anymore. I just put my tent wherever I want it because, you know, if the birds come in, I'll just shoot them. But the thing about it is it's amazing to me that they were up against these realities that they never had to face. Even elk hunting in a wall tent in a big camp, you know, it's now because we're out there, and yeah, there are bears probably right around camp, and yeah, they can come through camp. And yeah, if we don't keep our camp clean, if we don't, they'll probably get into our food at night. And so these are the realities that I think we've lost in society that we need to get back. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't want to throw technology away. I think technology is a great thing. I think that there's a lot of pioneers and a lot of adventurous attitudes that have built technology. But at the same time, when we're using this stuff to keep us out of having to rely on God and having to rely on just getting through things, and I think we take some of the human spirit, the God-given human spirit, away. And we don't rely on Him anymore. And that's why I say, when we talk about waking the wild within, that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to get people to understand that they have to have the Spirit of God working through them to be able to face a lot of these things. Now, I realize, you guys, that there's atheists that have gone through hard things and they find it in themselves and stuff, but they got to realize that that is just they were made in God's image, and that's just leftovers from being made in God's image. Even if they don't want to give Him the credit for that, there are not dogs sailing around the earth, getting stuck in the ice, and then having to mull their way through it, and then having to come up against the moral decisions that they have to. That's all God-given stuff. That's all humanity that God created. And so that's why here at the Life Outdoors, we're creating this space where people have to think about God, and they have to think about outside. And adventure does that. And even having to hike up huge mountains, feeling the hurt, and then understanding, I bet you some people that come on our trips have probably never slept as well as they slept on our trips in their life. And it's a combination of achieving something. It's a combination of having, you know, physically draining yourself spiritually and mentally draining yourself. and all these things. So when we talk about, and when we have the key phrase of wake the wild within, that's what we're talking about, is we want people to realize that they are not themselves. They're not the king of their world, that there is something spiritual going on for them being out there, and that spirit needs to wake up. So that's what we're talking about here. You guys, until next week, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but until next week, you guys, find a way to get out there and wake that wild within. Even if it's going up in the snow and going cross-country skiing and having a time crunch and getting out of the woods before it's dark, you're going to have to live outside yourself. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about wake the wild within. So get out there. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. And get out there and wake that wild within.